Good morning. In our second Shir on Pirkei Avot last week, I think we made it quite clear that was a Shir. Its purpose was to make it very, very clear to you all that we're not just talking about nice aphorisms. These are statements that are made here in Pirkei Avot that Jews, great Jews, gave their lives for it. And that these are things to live by, and if necessary, great Jews were also ready to die for what they said over here. So it's not just nice things. We discussed the idea that most of the Tanaim, the rabbis that appear in this third perek, were all lived during the worst period of the Roman occupation. Cruel and brutal persecution of the Jewish people during and following the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash until past the period of the fall of Bar Kokhba and the city of Beitar. Alright. The great leader of the Jewish people at the time, for that matter, we described Rabbi Akiva not only as, you know, another link in the chain, one of the most unusual and powerful links in the chain of Jewish tradition is Rabbi Akiva. His father Yosef was a ger, highly unusual, and here is this Rabbi Akiva, who from nothing becomes the one who in great measure carries upon his shoulder the Torah Sheba Al Peh. And we mentioned the Gemara in Masechta Menachos, where the Gemara says that when Moshe Rabbeinu came up to heaven, God showed him a Jew many generations later who was going to make crowns upon the letters of Torah, and that was Rabbi Akiva. And Moshe said, if you have somebody like Rabbi Akiva, why do you give Torah through me? He is the one who should have been chosen to give Torah to the Jewish people. Rabbi Akiva has remained one of the most unusual, outstanding, exceptional, respected, honored, revered rabbis of the Talmud. For that matter, the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Mishnah, the Tosefta, the Sifra, the Sifri, the Tanaitic writings are all the students of Rabbi Akiva, the Torah that he gave them. We're talking about a unbelievable body of Jewish thought. All right, so now you have that sheet that was given to you. You should recognize them both. One of them is the single sheet that has the whole parak on it. There's the single sheet with the whole parak, and then there are the two sheets that are stapled together.
My wife, give it to me. Yeah.
All right. Now, I want you to look at the single sheet first so that we get a picture of what's going to take place now. You turn over on the second side, you have over there Rabbi Yishmael and then Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva. There are four Mishnayot that are Rabbi Akiva, and now we're going to get down into the text of these four Mishnayot. One of them we already began, but now we're going to into greater and deeper understanding. Rabbi, I'm just going to read the four Mishnayot with very brief commentary so that you get a total picture of what it is that Rabbi Akiva is saying. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, Schok v'kalut rosh margilin et ha'adam le'erva. Schok, laughter, kalut rosh, on this side, schok v'kalut rosh, laughter and kalut rosh, levity, lightheadedness, margilin et ha'adam le'erva, they accustom a person to immorality. What it really means is that the Kalos Rosh represents a mindset in which barriers begin to fall. People say things that they wouldn't say under other circumstances. They may even begin to think of doing things that they would under other circumstances not do. But when the frame of mind, the atmosphere is one of kalut rosh, lightheadedness, anything can happen. It can bring a person to acts of absolute immorality. Masoret siyog latorah. Masoret is the siyog latorah. Siyog, Rashi says, means a wall, a fence, something that gives strength. Now, fences, I think that Rabbi Akiva is going to say, maybe beyond that which Robert Frost said. Robert Frost said that good fences make good neighbors. You know what Rabbi Akiva is saying? Good fences make good people. Good fences make good people. Every human being needs fences. Now, there are two purposes to a fence. The purpose of a fence is to keep others out. The purpose of a fence is also to keep me in. Now, he's talking about real fences, because we, of course, know about great walls and fences where people dig under and people shoot over. So I don't know what those fences accomplish. Those are hashlugin of fences. Right? But then there are fences. There are fences that protect the human being, protect the Jew from influences from without. It also protects me, the individual, from breaking outward. There's such a beautiful, beautiful description of a fence that has really become a hallmark of Yiddishkeit. It's on the pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Suga Bashoshanim, a hedge of roses. A hedge of roses. There's an imaginary wall there. Rashi gives two beautiful examples of Suga Bashoshanim, a fence, a hedge of roses. Here it is, Chosen and Kala. The wedding is over and they're alone. And she turns to the chosen and she says, Tipas dam, I've seen a drop of blood. Nobody is there. They can do anything that they want. But immediately, the chumayid, hu podesh, nope, he's not going to touch her. What is it that separates the two of them? There's no fence. There's no homa, there's no geder, there's no barbed wire, but there is this unseen, but powerful fence. The Word of God, separate. Then Rashi gives the other marshal, a person is walking along the road, it's a hot day, and here's a beautiful fruit tree hanging over onto the road, and he stretches out his hand in order to take a beautiful, beautiful, luscious fruit, and he hears a voice that says, no, no, no. No, 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 it's not yours. No. Who is the voice? The Rebbein Shem, man's conscience, Torah. And you know what he does? Back goes the hand. Sugo Bashu Shamin, there's the hedge of roses that separates the Jew. Protects him so that he should not break out beyond the bounds that are permitted to him. And it's also the fence that is to protect the Jew from the outside influences. We talked about the fact that Anshei Knesset HaGdola are the ones who at the beginning of Pirkei Avot said, Asu Siyog LaTorah, make fences. And there were a number of fences that were made by the men of the Great Assembly when they saw that Jews had already begun to assimilate. In Babel, under less than 7 years when they came back, one of the things that they prohibited was wine that was touched by a non-Jew. The purpose of it was to limit the social interaction between Jew and non-Jew, because that social interaction can lead to what we know that it has led to, assimilation, intermarriage. No. There's a wall. I have to know I'm different. He's different. That's all. We can look at all human beings as equal, but I have to protect. I have to be protected. So Rabbi Akiva in this mission is talking about the walls of protection. And as we said, it immediately brings us back to thinking about that first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Remember the great assembly said, Asu Siyog LaTorah, and Chachmei Yisrael, the wise men of Israel, have in fact done this throughout history. There are walls of separation that are necessary. So here in Masoret, you know, every time I come to, you know, I want to like run through the Mishnayot and then get back to, maybe that's the smartest thing. So you'll get a total picture. All right. Masoret, tradition. Tradition, I'm not going to sing it yet. Masoret is siyog, is a fence for Torah. Ma'asrot, siyog la'osha, giving ma'aser, giving the tithe, giving tzedakah, is a fence that protects a man's wealth. Nedodim, vows, asiyog leperishus, they are a fence that keep a man separate, control a man from doing the wrong thing. Siyog lechachma, shtika. If you want people to think you're smart,
be quiet.
Tzenisht, kimt es nicht. Tzenisht chadin, kimt es nicht. That's all. First Mishnah. Who are you all men? He used to say, this is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is going to say three separate and distinct ideas in this Mishnah. Chaviv Adam Shenivra Vitzelem, beloved is man who was created in the image of God. Chivayiteha, an even greater indication of God's love. And this is the way the Rambam learns this Mishnah. That there's an even greater indication of God's love is no da'at lo shenivra b'tzelem. God let him know that he's created in the image of God. It's the idea the Gemara says, hanotein matana l'chaver, if you give a gift to somebody, you should tell him that you gave him a gift. Where he says, if you give a gift to a child, you should let the parent know that you gave it, you know, because in a sense it creates a greater sense of friendship and camaraderie. Chiva Yitzeda Nodaslo, Nodatlo, God let him know. He let man know that he was created in the image of God. Shemana, because it says, Kibitzelim Elokim Osoit Adam. This passage comes from Parashat Noach. The Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva, does not use all of the psukim in Parashat Bereshit, where God says, let us make man in our form and in our shape, and they made man in the shape of God. No, he brings a pasuk in Parashat Noach, when Noach comes out of the ark, so God tells him, from now on and further, you must be certain not to permit man to kill fellow man. Don't dare spill blood, because Betzelem Elokim asa at the Kibetzelem Elokim asa at Adam. Man was made in the image of God. In this pasuk, it's the first pasuk and the only one, for that matter, I believe, in Tanakh, where God is saying to a human being, "I created you in my image." The psukim in Parshas Bereishis are the ones that tell us what God did, but not that he told man about it. And here what's important is God wants man to know that he's created in the image of God. And what, of course, does it mean on its most basic level, the idea that man is created in the image of God, is that he has intellect, he has a mind, he has free will, he has choice. This human personality, the human personality and the human intellect is capable of such of reaching such great heights. There are, is no other creature in all of the universe that can achieve the greatness that man is able to achieve. Second part of the Mishnah. Chavivin Yisrael, Israel, our beloved, Shenikru Bonim HaMakom. Israel is beloved because they are called the sons of the Holy One. Shenema, Bonim Atem LaShem Elokechem. You are sons to God your God. This is a pasuk in Dvarim where it says that you're not allowed to make tattoos or all sorts of in other words, to abuse one's body. The body is not yours, it belongs to God, and you're God's children. You can't simply abuse your body as you choose to. Same shot as we said before, there's even a greater indication of God's love is that He told us we're Bonim. He wants us to know that we are God's children. That they are called sons to God. The third level is Chavivin Yisrael Shenitam Lahem Kleichem, the beloved of Israel, that to them were given the object of all desire, which is Torah. There is an even greater indication of God's love is that He let them know that I'm giving you my Torah, which is the most precious thing in the world. Shenem, as it says, I have given you a good portion, don't forsake my Torah. That's second Mishnah. Most probably one of the most powerful and profound one-liners in all of Talmud is the next Mishnah. And of course we can only read it and translate it, but that's all we'll be able to do until we get to this Mishnah. Really, this is a one-liner about which there can be a whole year's worth of shiurim. And the way he was able to, there's certain brilliance in being able to take all of these great ideas and put them into so few words. Hakol tzafui. Everything is seen in advance. God knows everything. V'harashut netuna. And permission is granted to man. This is the great discussion, and we will touch upon certain aspects of this discussion. God knows everything, but it does not affect our ability to choose. Nobody can say, listen, since God knew that I was going to do this, that means I had to do it. Because if I wouldn't have done it, then God's knowledge would have been wrong. Chassid Shalom is able to say, you can't say that. The Rambam deals with this issue in a number of places, and we will take a closer look at one of them is in the Rambam's introduction to Pirkei Avot, which is known as the Shmoneh Parakim LaRambam, the eight chapters of the Rambam. Chapter 8, the Rambam talks about the idea of free will. Let nobody make the mistake of thinking that maybe we are determined, that we don't really have free will, we're nothing more than robots and puppets, because listen, God knows everything that's going to be, and His knowledge is absolute. It says, Zarg Zichnish Kindler. And that's exactly what it's all summed up, four words, it's unbelievable, these four words, Hakol Tzafui, everything is seen by God, v'rishut netuna, and permission is granted. You can do whatever you want. U'betuv ha'olam nidon, and the world is judged in a good manner. God is good to His people. Remember, once we say that God knows everything, and that man has free will, that means obviously that man is going to be called to accounting. Because you have free will, And God knows exactly what you did, so therefore you're going to be called to judgment, so you should know. B'tuv ha'olam nidon. The world is, God judges kindly with goodness. V'hakol v'rov ha'maseh. And everything depends on how much one does, how many mitzvahs. There's a very fascinating Rambam over here, where the Rambam says, Hakol, everything is according to the abundance of acts. The Rambam says, there's a fundamental difference between giving 100 shekel to one person for charity, or giving 1 shekel 100 times to different people. Rov HaMaseh, he says, is, it's true in the end, you only gave 100 shekel. But when you gave 100 times, you have created a habit. You have trained yourself, and that training is precious. Third Mishnah. I say, the greatest one-liner in all of Talmud. And well, if we end up knowing and understanding that one line, you can be very proud of yourself. Last, what an unbelievable Mishnah. Here again, we can only read it, and then we're going to get down to it all. Hu hayah omer, Rabbi Akiva used to say, Hakol naton natun be'eravon. Everything is given to man on condition. Eiravon, huh? As a pledge, it's given temporarily, yes. In other words, you have a responsibility to do something with what's given to you. There is a net spread out over all of life. Hachanut petucha. The store is open. V'achen v'ni makif. And the storekeeper gives you credit. And then, what he's describing is the idea that there's a big world out there. There's a lot you can do. But you should know, the storekeeper keeps a cheshbon. Yeah, you can take, you want to take from this world, but we have an accounting of it all. V'atinkos patuach. The ledger is open. V'ayad kotevet. And the hand writes. V'chol harotze lilvot. Whoever wants to borrow, yavo v'yilze, let him come and borrow. V'hagabayim machzirin tode b'chayom. And the gabayim, those who work for the storekeeper, go around the world every day, and there are collections going on all the time. V'nifroyin min ha'adam, and they take exact payment from a man. Midato v'shalom midato. Sometimes he may know precisely why that payment is being taken from him, and sometimes he's already forgotten that he owes. V'yeshlehem amashi yismochu. And these gaboyim, these collectors, they have a great deal upon which to depend. And you should know, hadin din emet, the judgment that God passes is truth. Vakol mitukam l'su'udah. And everything is ready for the great su'udah, yemot ha-mashiach, chayei olam haba. What an unbelievably beautiful and powerful Mishnah. Now we're going to start again these 4 Mishnayot. So now we put aside this page, because we have the picture of the 4 Mishnayot of Rabbi Akiva. Back to the first Mishnah. Schok v'kalut rosh margilin le'erva. So we explained, of course, schok means laughter. Now, we have to understand, what do you mean? You're not allowed to laugh in this world? Well, in a sense, in Sher HaMalos we say, Oz Yimale Sechok Pino. Then our mouths will be full of laughter. What's Dovra Vela talking about? When the nations of the world are going to say, Higdil Hashem Lasso Sevela, God has done great things with this people. Hazorin v'dima, those who sow with tears, berino yiptzoru, will harvest with song. All right, so then we can say that that schok is the kind of schok that's only latid lavo. Shlomo HaMelech says in Tehillim 8 lischok. There's a time for laughter. There's a time for laughter. Not only that, who was the big laugher in Talmud? Rabbi Akiva. How many times have you heard the Gemara? Rabbi Akiva and the rabbis are walking up Harat Sofin, and they look and they see a fox going into the Holy of Holies, and the wise men of Israel began to cry. And Rabbi Akiva, Lisachek, Skok, us, of course, you know, why are you crying? Why are you laughing? So Rabbi Akiva says, when I see that the prophecy of punishment has been fulfilled precisely, the Navi said, Shu'olim Hilchuba, there will be foxes going into the Holy of Holies. Now I am certain that the prophecy of Geula redemption, Od Yeshu Zekenim Uzekenot Berechavot Yerushalayim, the elderly will sit in the streets of Yerushalayim with their canes in their hands, V'yuladim Misachakim Berechavotah, and children Misachakim are laughing through the streets of Yerushalayim. He says, once I saw that the prophecy of punishment was fulfilled precisely, now I know that the prophecy of redemption is also going to be fulfilled, to which the rabbis responded, Nichamtanu Akiva, Nichamtanu Rabbi Akiva, you have consoled us. Akiva, you have consoled us. So obviously, to understand this Mishnah, there's nothing wrong with Schok. The Gemara even says about various rabbis that they would open the shir with a
joke.
I don't want to use the word joke. I don't know, something humorous. Okay, I like that, something humorous. Now, I don't like the word joke. You understand? It's interesting. When it comes to jokes, there's always somebody that's going to make what we call an off-color joke. What I never understood in my career, why there were some people that thought, and there were always a few back in my history, that thought that the rabbi is just the one who's going to appreciate his dirty joke. And it always, you know, it threw me into an uncomfortable position. What am I supposed to do? Laugh? Ha ha ha. What am I supposed to tell him? Shake the best of best. You're telling me such jokes. But you've always had it. I never understood it. I don't know, most probably, maybe now with a white beard, they're afraid of me. But I tell you, if anybody told me a dirty joke now, boy, would he get it? He'll never forget that. He'll never forget it. Oh, it's crazy about a cop. I have to listen to this Nanish guy. That's the kind of stuff, the schok of Kamos Rosh, Margilin Le'erva. The schok, laughter is fine. But the laughter that comes with a sense of levity, that the boundaries are gone, I can say whatever I want, I can let it all hang out, that brings directly to immorality. Directly to immorality. There has to be the fence, Suga Bashoshanim, the hedge of roses, the hedge of roses. The Mefarshim, of course, ask over here, we see how the Mishnah is set up. Shouldn't it have been written in a different way? Just like it's going to say immediately afterwards, Masoret, Siyok LaTorah, maybe it should have said, Koved Rosh, seriousness is Siyog L'Erva. No. Build it the other way. So I saw some of the Farshim will say that it wouldn't be a correct word to use. Because Kovad Rosh leaves the impression that you should walk around unsmiling all day. It even smacks of absolute depression. Father Alshon came from Lubavitch, Rav Naftali from Lubavitch, the great tzaddik said, Atzvus is nicht kein Aveire, aber Atzvus can bring him to the Eretz Aveiros. Atzvus, depression is not an Aveire. It doesn't say, Lo Tihyeh Atzeis, thou shalt not be depressed. Oh, but he said, Atzvus can bring to the worst Aveiros. The person who is depressed. Torah never wanted that. Oh, no, no, no. The human being has to have a sense of joy and happiness. I'm going to say a pshat in this Mishnah, and I think it's going to be true of all of the Mishnayot. It's not said here, but I believe it's here. One of the great statements of many, but one of the greatest, if we're to choose one of the greatest statements of Rabbi Akiva, Talmud Yerushalmi says, V'yohavta l'reyachot kamocha, love your friend like yourself, Rabbi Akiva said, Ze klal gadol batorah. That's a great rule of Torah. A great rule of Torah. I think underlying this Mishnah and the next Mishnah, all of them, is this theme, which obviously was a basic part of the thought of Rabbi Akiva. And I think in this Mishnah, what's going to come to the fore is the following. You have to love your friend like yourself. Which means the following. What happens if I don't love myself? There are people like that. If I'm unhappy with myself, a person who is unhappy with himself is never going to be able to love another human being. The pasuk is really quite straightforward. Love has to begin at home. I'm the closest to me. If I love myself, I can love other people. If I don't love myself, I got a problem. I got a serious problem. What Rabbi Akiva is saying in this Mishnah is, for a human being to love himself, he has to turn himself into a moral, upstanding citizen. The one who's involved in schok, the kalut rosh, that's margilin, that brings a person to immorality, and you never know where it's going to stop. You don't know where it's going to stop. That person is not going to be happy with himself. He's not going to love himself. He may try to present a face to the world as though he is so at peace with himself, and he's a tortured soul. A tortured soul cannot love a fellow human being. So the first step is to stay away from schok, the kalut rosh. Beautiful. One of the first ones says, midvar sheker tirchak. You're supposed to stay far away from falsehood. Sheker, schok, kalut rosh. You have to stay away from that. This sense of the humorous that goes one step further and becomes the lightheadedness, dangerous point. Masoret Siyog LaTorah. There are two pshatim in the word masoret. One is brought by the Rav, Rabbi Uvadia Mibar Tanura. If you turn over onto, yes, this side, right up here at the top, Masoret. It says Rabbi Ovadia Mibar Tanura, Masoret, Latorah. Latorah. HaMasoret Shemosru Lanu Chachomim B'chaseirot V'yeteirot Shabbatorah Hem Geder V'chizuk L'torah Shabbatat. The tradition, what tradition are we talking about? You should know there is a tradition and it is written. Exactly how each word in Torah is to be spelled. With a vav, without a vav, with a yud, without a yud. Precisely how each word in Torah is spelled. That masora, that's called the masora in the Mikros Gedolos Chumashim. You have it on the side of the text. You have Masora Gedola and Masora Katana. It tells you how often the same word appears in other places, how it's spelled in other places. It's quite an intricate, amazing system that was created in order to make sure that we can transmit the Torah from one generation to the next, 3,500 years after Torah was given, and you can find Sifrei Torah from all over the world. They're all the same. If there are any differences, they are so slight and so insignificant. So slight and so insignificant. This can only have been accomplished. I mean, there are millions of people that wrote Sifrei Torah. Many millions. Many millions of Sifrei Torah were written. And it retained its integrity. This is an unbelievable, unbelievable feat. That feat was accomplished by the Masorah. But it's not only that it's a feat that was accomplished by the Masorah. A Jew sat down to write a Sefer Torah, wrote a Sefer Torah with a sense of mission, fear, Yirat Shamayim. I am now writing Torah for all time. Shal Yedeyim, he goes on to say, Onu Mevinim Kama Mitzvos Echiasotam. Through the Masorah we know, we understand Torah, how many mitzvahs there are. I'll give you the examples that he brings in a moment. I'll tell you, whenever I come to this Masorah Tziag LaTorah, I can't help but, I don't know, be very saddened. The last 200 years, there arose a field called biblical criticism. Biblical criticism said, no, Torah given at Sinai, no. Torah is really a collection of all sorts of different texts that were available at different times that were put together by some unknown editor, and they simply attempted to take Torah and dismember it pasuk from pasuk. The ultimate purpose, of course, was no. Torah given at Sinai, forget about it. Torah was not given at Sinai. It's not given at Sinai. It's not divine. It's not divine. We can do it whatever you want. There's nothing binding about it. I mean, that's why Pirkei Avos begins with that great mission of Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai Umesara LeYoshua. Moshe received Torah at Sinai and gave it to Yoshua. And Torah has been so carefully guarded throughout history. It staggers the imagination that people thought that Torah was just a collection of all sorts of fragments that were put together. The fact is that in great measure, biblical criticism has been discredited. It's not a science anymore. Just somebody forgot to tell the Hebrew University.
They are still having...
You want to get all of the apocursorship courses in biblical criticism, you go over to the Hebrew University. Nobody tapped them on the back and said, Chevre, it's over. You attempted to destroy Torah and it didn't work. But they've tried other ways. There's a second shot in Masoret. So either Masoret means, the technical term Masoret being exactly the way each word is supposed to be written. And that's called Masoret, and there are two, Masoret Gedola, Masoret Katana. I say you can find it whenever you want. You can find it in the Mikros Gedolos Chumash. Maybe if we have the time, I'll show you a page of a Mikros Gedolos, so you'll know what the Masoret is. But there's another meaning to the word Masoret. Another meaning to the word Masoret is exactly what it means in that first Mishnah in Perkei Avos, the transmission of Torah. Torah was transmitted
by great people from generation to generation, Masoret, Siog LaTorah. And what was important about the Masoret was that it was from Rebbe to Talmud, Rebbe to student. One, the Rebbe speaking to his student so that they could understand each other well and make no mistake. And this is how it was transmitted faithfully throughout all of history. Ad Hayom Hazeh. And Rabbi Akiva talked about what Moshe taught us. We talk about what Rabbi Akiva is mamish alive and well, together with Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, with all the Gedolei Olam. You can go into an elementary school, into a high school, a religious school. You go into a yeshiva. All of the great chain of Masorah is alive. It's pulsating. It's growing, and then in fact affects our lives every day. That Masorah, that protected Torah, that was the fence that protected Torah. The Torah was not going to be attacked from without, or that we should not break out beyond its borders. Masorot Siyog La'osha. People think the way to make money, it's not how much you make, it's how much you save. I think back sometimes, maybe I should have done it. There was an ad, a bank in Toronto, tuck away a buck a day. Did you say that? You remember that? Tuck away a buck a day. Now, I think that was about 40 years ago. I'm afraid to make the cheshbon. What would have happened if I was have tucked away a buck a day? I'd maybe have a few hundred. You remember tuck away a buck a day? Who was it? The Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce, or who? One of those tuck away a buck a day, huh?
Bank of Nova Scotia.
So people think common wisdom is, if you save, if you're frugal, not too frugal, if you're thrifty. Yeah. Along comes Rabbi Akiva says, no! The greatest protection for wealth is if you give away money. Yeah. You give away money.
Wow.
In other words, nobody would have thought anything of the sort. Says you give mice and you give stock and you give to the Kohen, you give to the Levi. You think you're giving away? You're not giving away. You're protecting everything else that you have. Famous Gemara that says, Aser ta Aser. Tithe, you should tithe. You should give a tenth. On which the Gemara says, Aser, give maestris b'shvil shetit Aser, so that you should become rich. A person who realizes that the wealth that is given to him is a bracha of the Rebbeim, and it's given to him, as Rabbi Akiva is going to say later, the storekeeper lends out a lot of money. If you think that the money is yours, you're in trouble. But if you realize that it's all on loan, and you know what the boss man would like? That you should give. You should give. Giving miser is the siyog. That's the fence. The fence for osha. For wealth. Nidorin siyog laprishus. Nidorin means taking a vow. Now the fact is that the Gemara and the Psukim in Kohelet, that are not terribly happy with the idea of vows. Not terribly happy with the idea of taking vows. Tov asher lo tidor. Better you should not take a vow, mishet tidor, than you should make a vow and then not fulfill it. I mean, we're always saying bli neder, you know, bli neder. sometimes. You know, the people say it about everything, you know. Blinator, everything's blinator. Okay. Blinator. It's very important. And all is because the idea of not making a neder and not to
desecrate the word that comes out of one's mouth is the idea that a word, gezukt avod, is avod. Avod is avod. You say something, you have to be careful to keep what you say. You can't just make all sorts of promises or half promises and not keep it. It's terribly important. Speech is the great gift that was given by God to man. Speech represents the intelligence of man. You don't abuse that. You don't abuse that. Which means, as I always say, there's no mitzvah that when somebody puts a mic in your face that you have to talk. I'm waiting for the day when somebody will not say a word. Or would we be better off? Would we be better off? Nitzugleiben, would we be better off? There's too much talk. Loose lips sink ships. We're going in. No, 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 we're not staying, we're not staying. Don't get worried, we're not staying. We're going out, right, right. Okay, rose up. Nidorim siogla precious. However, a human being knows himself. There are times at which we feel that we have a certain weakness, and I need something to assist with that weakness. We all know that we have weaknesses. I mean, some of us, of course, don't have any weaknesses. We're talking about the common man out there. I mean, a lot of weaknesses people have. I mean, Weight Watchers. Weight Watchers is built on weakness. We need help. We need that which is going to assist us in maintaining a diet is very, very difficult. It's important, but it's very difficult. So I need whatever I can to assist me in that process. It's very important. Nidorim, when it is used in order to assist a person in keeping him away from doing the wrong thing. I know I have a weakness. There were yidin, and we'll see, it'll fit in right away. There were yidin that used to go on a tainus dibur. Not to talk. No, you shoot your mouth off, and then you feel bad that you shut your mouth off, and you decide, that's it. Me? I'm getting quiet. I know, I've done it so often. Done it so often. Siyag l'chachma shtika. Siyag l'chachma shtika. Here also very fascinating. That which strengthens wisdom is silence. And by silence, what they mean is, in order to absorb wisdom, you have to learn how to listen. You have to learn how to listen. There's going to be a mission in the next, in the fifth parak. That describes the difference between an uncouth individual and a wise man. A wise man does not respond until he's thought it out, does not break into the words that somebody else. A wise man watches what he says, and usually silence is the most important most important fence to wisdom. All this whole Mishnah means that man is on a he's on the border, and so many things we're on the border. We are, I mean, there's so much going on in the world that can have impact on us. I mean, it's of course, in our day and age, it's infinitely more powerful. I mean, everything around us, radio, TV, newspapers, a whole society, to remain a fully view today is, we're getting big points. There's such an assault on everything holy.
You need fences. You need fences. You have to be able to be strong enough to maintain those fences. And it begins to break down at the beginning of the Mishnah. The moment one is involved in schok and kalut rosh, oh God, that can bring to all of the worst things. And by the way, it's interesting that it said margilin le'erva. You know, erva really means bad acts of immorality. So, you know, isn't it a little, come on, one can ask. Let's not be so overdramatic, you know. A little clean or not such clean fun can already bring to immorality. Wait a minute. So Rashi says the Yetzirah works in very, very fascinating ways. He doesn't just come to the Jew and say, "Do kol tovarosa." No. So it starts with one little thing and then another little thing. It reminds me of, I'll just repeat briefly something that I said about 13 years ago and repeated it 10 years ago, and it's all related to the parsha we just read, so that it will point out to us the workings of the evil inclination. At the end of Parshat Chukat, it says, Cheshbon is the city of Sichon. Sichon, king of the Amori. Cheshbon was his city. V'humilcham b'melech Moav Hadishon, he waged war against the first king of Moav. V'yikach, and he took kol artzo miyado, his whole land from him until the river Arno. Pray tell me, why do I have to know that Sihon waged war with the first king of Moab? What does that do for my my ruchnius? I'm going to be less of a Jew if I don't know. I don't know who Sihon was. I don't know who the first king of Moab was. I may be able to find out where Cheshbon is, but so what? And the pasuk goes on to say, okay, Yom HaMoshe, therefore the balladeers, the poets say, Bo Cheshbon, come to Cheshbon. Ti bona v'tikonein, here's Sichon. Be built and established, the city of Sichon. Isn't that like how we talk about the Mishalayim? Ti bona v'tikonein. The pasuk now is going to wax so poetic about this city of Sichon, Cheshbon. Wow! Ki eish yotzom Cheshbon, because fire went out of Cheshbon. Lehova flame. Mikiryat Sichon, from the metropolis of Sichon. Ochla, it had consumed all Moab, the great city of Moab. Balei Bamot Arnon, the heights of Arnon. But what's the Torah getting here excited about Cheshbon? Nachamol Cheshbon, Nachamol Cheshbon. Who cares? What difference does it make? Another piece of history, I have to remember that Sichon fairways well with the first. The Gemara in Bas Basra says, "Alkein Yomru HaMoshim." Moshim has another meaning. Not only those who say Mishalim, who say parables, but Moshim also means those who rule over their evil inclination. Mosheil b'Yisrael. Alkein Yomru HaMoshim, that you have to make the cheshbon. What benefit are you going to get from the avera? And wouldn't it have been better to do a mitzvah? Cheshbon shalom. The cheshbon ha-nefesh that a person has to make. What does the city of Cheshbon have to do with cheshbon ha-nefesh, an accounting of one's life? I mean, like we're going too far afield, it would seem. So I remember having heard about 45 or 50 years ago from my Rashid in Baltimore at the time, Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Halevi Ruderman. He said the following. He never knew that 50 years later his student would use it in a completely different context, but he'll forgive me. He said the following, I think he said it was a medrash, or that they say it in the name of Rabbi Yisrael, so long time, I don't know, if the 50 years covered the Chavisluf, I guess, but I don't remember. I didn't forget what he said. What's so significant about Cheshbon? So you have to know and listen very carefully. Cheshbon was a little town at the border of Moab. Sihon, king of Amori, is coming from the north, and he is poised to invade Moab. The entire military industrial establishment of Moab is having a serious meeting. What should they do about Cheshbon? Because you have to understand, Cheshbon is a flea-bitten, one-horse town. It most probably has Goldberg's, I don't know, general store. There's a saloon with sliding doors, a dusty, geographically insignificant place. So the decision is taken by the entire military establishment of Moab. We're not going to commit our forces to protect Cheshbon. It's a waste. It's a waste. We're going to withdraw from Cheshbon. We're going to take the one horse, the fleas, maybe even the lockup, and Goldberg, and we're moving out of Cheshbon. Let Sihon, let him sink in the dust of Cheshbon. They withdraw. Sihon comes marching into Cheshbon without shooting an arrow. And he waits. And what he does? He begins to bring in men, material, equipment. Little Cheshbon, day by day, begins to turn into Festung Cheshbon, a fortress. It grows and it grows in strength. It's a foothold. It's a beachhead. And you know what ultimately happened because of the profound stupidity and tragedy of having abandoned, withdrawn, disengaged from Cheshbon? You know what happened? Eish yotza mecheshbon. Fire went out of Cheshbon. Lehova, flame from Kiryat Sichon. And he conquered all of Moab. The Gemara is saying the following. The Moshlim, the balladeers, talk about the people who are able to rule over their inclinations. The Yetzirah never comes along and tells the Jews a Shemi Shabbos, be Mechal Shabbos now. No. You know what he does? All he wants is do a little Aveihala. A little Lashon Hara. Go ahead. See, try. I'm not going to strike it down. No, you see, you said it. Okay. Yetzirah now knows that he has a beachhead. He'll wait till by this time. Get him to do another Aveha. Margilin, get into this, get into that. That's what Rashi is saying. Margilin. Step by step, until one day, the man doesn't recognize himself anymore. The message of Cheshbon. Any messages that you were thinking about with regard to the last 13 years of this country, I had every one of them in mind. Precisely that. You withdraw, you leave place for a beachhead, it will turn into a fortress of evil that, God forbid, consume the human being. That was Cheshbon. The great strategic withdrawal. We're not going to waste soldiers to protect Goldberg and his gang in Cheshbon. Well, let's bring him into Moab, you know, just bring him back home to Moab. And having left Cheshbon ultimately meant the end of all of Moab. Schok v'kalus gosh. and kalistos can be lightheadedness about serious, serious issues. We take a chance. We take a gamble. Margilin Lerva brings to who knows what. That's what the pasuk. That's why Torah was talking about that city Cheshbon. That city Cheshbon was so significant and so important, but they didn't see it. You have to be able to see that that little flea-bitten one-horse town. You have to see what it can be turned into as a terribly powerful, destructive force of all of Moab. The rest is commentary to be continued next week.